Welcome to The Buzz. I'm Christopher Conover. This week, the impact and legacy of land-grant universities. In 1885, the University of Arizona became one of 52 land-grant universities across the country to receive federal land through the Morrill Act, which was signed into law by President Abraham Lincoln. Those lands were used to create universities that would, quote, benefit the agricultural and mechanical arts. That act took nearly 11 million acres of land away from 250 native tribes across the country. The news organization Grist dove deep into how those once native lands are used today by universities across the nation, including the University of Arizona. We start today's show with Tristan Ottone, a Grist editor that helped lead the project. He first walks us through how the lands are used now.
There are sort of two stories when it comes to how land was used from the Morrill Act, and you can more or less draw a dividing line to some degree between east and west down the Mississippi River about how land is being used. So universities along the East Coast are more or less given coupons for land in the West. And this is because most of those eastern states don't have public lands anymore, so they can't give them to the universities to sell. So instead, they give them coupons in the West so they can sell those lands. States in the West are given lands within their state borders. And then they more or less either sell them or in some cases hold on to them and or lease them to bring in revenue for the institution. So it's a bit of an oversimplification, but generally that's kind of the divide in how they're being used.
That may surprise some people because when they hear about land-grant universities, they think, oh, it's just the land that the university is on. It sounds like it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that I thought defined a land-grant institution as well, too, that the government gave them a piece of land, they built their university on it, and voila, they're a land-grant institution. But, you know, it's a much more complex process in which land is given across the newly established public domain to these institutions to sell. I mean, you really, the thing that you have to think about here is that, first off, that land comes from tribes first. You have to clear that land. You have to make it available to enter into the U.S.'s real estate system. And then you hand it over to these universities. But I think the other thing you want to keep in mind is that, you know, land-grant institutions are more or less like America's sort of original Nepo babies, right? Like, they're being given all of this, like, wealth that's being transferred so that they can get off the ground. And then in the years afterwards, they're being given even more land to use in order to stay afloat. So the system is working by taking those expropriated lands and monetizing them so that those institutions can exist.
Is this land that the universities are given, besides what they're sitting on, is it just sold to, I guess, for lack of a better term, for profit, or are other enterprises going on that land that is helping fund various universities that are called land grant across the country?
In the West, many states and institutions hold on to these lands and then use them to generate revenue. That can be for agriculture, that can be for oil and gas, that can be for timber, it can be for a myriad of different uses that continue to sort of provide revenue to institutions.
The University of Arizona, a land-grant university, in recent years has added land acknowledgments in various speeches and at the bottom of websites and press releases and things like that. They've started putting signs outside some of the buildings, you know, with the name of the building, but also in the Otham language, one of the tribes here. Is that all part of a change in the way people think about the land grants, or is it just so much more lip service, for lack of a better term?
Well, we have seen land acknowledgments all over the country for years. I think what makes University of Arizona a little bit unique is that they established their Native Scholars Grant which appears to be a sort of recognition of their complicity, more or less, in acquiring lands through the Morrill Act. And the Native Scholars Grant is designed to provide, to cover tuition for Native students who are going to the school. So that does make you, Arizona, a little bit unique. But generally, those land acknowledgments, I think we've seen around the country, and do begin to hint towards sort of not only the history, but potentially even the debt that a lot of these institutions owe to indigenous nations whose resources they continue to rely on.
Your team followed the story of one native UA student who ended up needing to withdraw from the university due to the cost of attendance. She's now attending the Thonaatham Community College, where attendance is free. What does she have to say about maybe what the solution should about all of this could be?
Yeah, I mean, so the student we profiled, Alina Sierra, was forced to drop out because the Native Scholars Grant didn't cover the entire cost of tuition. So that entire, I think it's $34,000 that a student needs to pay to attend the university. The Native Scholars Grant only covers like the $13,000, which is tuition. So all the other fees, housing, travel, etc., those aren't covered. And Miss Sierra couldn't have that covered. And I think one of the things when we talked to her about her situation is that she was quite clear that she felt that the University of Arizona should be doing more to assist Native students, specifically because University of Arizona and their land acknowledgement and their Native Scholars Grant are recognizing that they're on the lands of the Tohono O'odham. Their trust lands come from the Tohono O'odham. The resources on those trust lands, like oil and gas or agriculture or whatever, are, Tohono O'odham resources that have been taken from the tribe, and you have a Tohono O'odham student that can't afford to go there. So I think, her analysis of that the university could be doing more is obviously spot on. But I think for any of these institutions that are land grant institutions that owe indigenous nations a debt, paying the cost of tuition is like the absolute least they could be doing for tribal citizens. The paying the cost of attendance for every Native student at University of Arizona, if I recall, was something around like $9 million when we did the calculations. I believe that's half of what the university puts into its football program. So it's not, this is not a far stretch, and this is not a giant student population that's going to cause University of Arizona any more financial problems than they haven't already found themselves in.
Since you've published this article, have you received any feedback from the tribes?
We've started to see a lot of interest in our data and conversation around how our research and investigation is sort of pushing a lot of these ideas forward. I think most specifically, one of the most recent stories we put out was about the number of trust lands that are actually inside reservation borders. So this was something that was a little bit unique, and we were not expecting in our investigation to find that, those state trust lands that offset taxes for state citizens are inside more or less the boundaries of domestic dependent nations in the U.S. So you sort of have this sort of like flip in perception that suddenly you have more or less the as you could say, the dominant society is actually relying on Native nations in order to more or less survive and pay less taxes.
That was Grist Editor-at-Large Tristan Ottone. In recent years, the University of Arizona has prioritized its mission to serve indigenous students through programs like the Native Scholars Grant and creating its first tribal microcampus to serve the Pascua-Yaqui tribe. UA Law Professor Robert Williams helped lead many of those initiatives. We sat down to talk with him about the law school's attempt to document UA's land history and where it came from. He starts off by telling us how the land grant project started.
2020, High Country News came out with this big expose called Land Grab You. And it was the first time, you know, anybody had really looked at the relationship between the Morrill Act of 1862, which establishes the land-grant university. And it really opened up people's eyes that all of these land-grant universities, the only reason they're here is because the government used Indian lands, those ancestral lands, many of which had not been ceded by treaty, some of which had been ceded by treaties that were later held by the Indian Claims Commission to be, you know, dealing in dishonorable dealings. And it just sort of, you know, lit up people's eyeballs. And they started going back into records, into history. And it was something that our university, of course, was very aware that we were a land-grant university. The provost, Liesl Folks, said we should do a further investigation. You know, this particular article maybe covers 30 or 40 universities. What about the U of A story? So she asked the Indigenous Peoples Law and Policy Program at the law school, because you're talking about legislation and laws, it seems the obvious place to start, and asked if I would help lead the project. And I was smart enough to go right down to our library, and our law library director, Teresa Miguel Stearns, and her IT guru, Cass Lewandowski, put together a team to really do a deep dive. It had never been done before. Talk about a deep dive. We went to the cellar of the law school and started looking around. And Teresa and her staff found the original lawyer's title copybook by which the first deed for the University of Arizona was transferred from two gamblers and a saloon owner.
Which is also so Arizona on its own.
Yeah, they had purchased 160 acres from another land speculator. And the legislature said, if we're going to establish a land-grant university, you guys got to get some land for it. And so they bought the U of A, bought the land, the Board of Regents bought the land for $1, 40 acres. It's where Old Main sits. This is the original grant. And then somehow these two gamblers, I don't even want to think about why they sold 40 acres for $1, but you know something was going on there. And that satisfied the legislature to appropriate $25,000 by which Old Main was built. And then what we are able to do when we did that research was go through the land records, the history. We looked at every tribe's treaty in the universe in Arizona, and basically put together the story of how the U of A was built upon these grants of land that had been held by Arizona tribes.
And we will put a link to that on our website so all of our listeners can go and find it and play. I love good maps, and this is a fun one to play with.
Yeah, it's a fun website because we also go through the treaty history of all 22 Arizona tribes, and we have links to their web pages and links to the treaties that they signed. So not only is it just a great, you know, historical document focused on land-grant history, but it really gives you a window into the federal relationship, the signing of treaties, the taking of Indian land, the transfer to the states, all the way to the bottom of the website where you see what the U of A is doing today as part of that land grant tradition.
What about the local tribal leaders that we have here, and were you involved with them, and what was their reaction, if you were, when you went to them?
Yeah, we were able to show the Alpha Virgin, not only to scholars and experts here, but also shared it with tribes. Our senior vice president for Native American Advancement and Tribal Engagement, Levi Escara, was able to show this to the tribes, and they started playing with it too. You know, they start looking, of course, what do they want to see their own tribe. And, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why that's important. I think, you know, when we talk about what were the goals of this project, well, one was just to document that history of how the U of A came into being on the backs of basically Indian land. But the other was to sort of provide, you know, an educational platform for people to understand this history, to do research themselves. I think you're going to find a lot of tribal researchers are going to be using this as a valuable resource. And it helps to know. It's easy to say, well, you know, the tribes in Arizona were colonized and then put on reservations. But that's not where the story ends, because where did that land go that wasn't included in the reservation?
Was there anything that you found that was really surprising, or was it all more or less what you expected?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching Indian law for 40 years. I didn't think anything would surprise me. I honestly didn't know anything about the land grant. I knew this was a land grant university, but I had never thought in my mind, gee, where did that land come from? And the connection is obvious. It came from the tribes that were living here. And you know, how were they compensated? Were treaties provided? Was the government relocating them from traditional lands, for example? So having that documentary history for me and seeing it laid out in maps, and then seeing sort of over time, the decrease of the Indian land base and the increase of the university's endowment under the Arizona Land Trust was very revealing.
So the university is pushing initiatives now like the new Pasquayaki microcampus. Does that serve as a means to maybe healing's the word? Maybe that's not the right word?
Well, the interesting thing is that this project, and particularly the High Country News project, came along at about the time when a lot of non-Indian institutions were adopting land acknowledgments. So obviously this knowledge pushed the idea of a land acknowledgment to the front, and it was something that President Robbins led and Provost folks at the time, and that Levi Ascara, the senior VP for Native American Affairs, carried out. But as I always like to say, you know, land acknowledgments that are just performative, as my Generation X students tell me, I love that word, performative, but it's very powerful, don't really mean that much. So then you ask, okay, you've acknowledged it. Now, what are you going to do about it? And I have to say, the U of A has responded in spades in terms of some of the initiatives. We have, for example, as part of the strategic plan for the university, there was a commitment to hire a senior vice president for Native American Affairs. That was carried through and carried out with the hiring of Levi Ascara. We've held two annual tribal leaders summits where we bring in not just Arizona tribal leaders, but I've been at those summits. We've brought in tribal leaders from all over the United States. So the president and his senior executive leadership team are really able to get a pretty good picture of what are the tribal needs out there, not just for U of A as a land grant institution for the state of Arizona, but as a research one, you know, a university with a world-class reputation responding to these indigenous rights issues that are happening all over the world. Growing right out of this recognition of our responsibility under the Morrill Act is the Arizona Native Scholars Program. I mean, that's a tremendous, I think, earth-shattering initiative and a real breakthrough because, as we know, affordability is horrible for all families. You can imagine for Native kids. We've always had a very low enrollment for Native kids. So the Scholars Program basically guarantees that their tuition will be covered. The university puts together Pell Grants, other financial aid, and then is able to top that off. And our numbers for undergraduate really exploded this year. So that's having a positive impact. And then college is expensive. You know, it costs $50,000 a year to come to the U of A now if you're living on campus. And so we're hearing two things. One is affordability. We just, many of our two-year college-educated members are working for the tribe. They can't drop everything and go. You need to bring the university to us. And I'd been working at the law school and working with our dean on our international microcampuses. You know, we have microcampuses, I think, in Peru. We have them in China. And the president and we were talking, and he said, well, you know, tribes are nations, and we have international microcampuses. Why not apply the microcampus idea to Indian nations? And that was born. As the provost at the time, provost folks said, I said, well, how many of these do you want? And she said, I want 22 in Arizona. And so that's our goal, that any tribe that wants a University of Arizona microcampus, we're going to do everything we can to put that there.
Obviously, a lot of progress being made, a lot of big things going on. You've been involved with the university here, you said, since 1987. You said when you went to law school at Harvard, you were the only Native American in your class.
Yes.
So, perfect world. You have all the power for a day. What do universities, be it University of Arizona or all universities, especially the land grants, what do they need to do? What's still, I'm sure there's a long way to go. What still needs?
Yeah, and President Robbins, I've heard him say several times, not only to his own executive team, but to tribes, that we want to transform the relationship of the land-grant university to tribal nations. And so what's involved in that transformation? There is no other university in the world that's invested like this university has in top-notch indigenous faculty, top-notch indigenous programs, top-notch indigenous research, and top-notch teaching. So that's the challenge. How do we get all that expertise here at the university out into Indian country, out into the indigenous world? they just, you know, this is a very, in most cases, a poor client base, okay? You're really trying to squeeze blood from a stone. And so you're looking for the most efficient, effective, and quality types of academic platforms. And the U of A has been an innovator. I mean, if you look at our rankings for our online programs, they're some of the best in the United States, some of the best in the world. And we can bring those platforms and combine them through technology, through the internet, through Zoom. So to me, that's the 21st century challenge, is how do we harness this great technological revolution that, quite frankly, indigenous peoples have not participated in, but make it work for indigenous peoples in this higher education realm and professional training. That's the other big challenge. Is, yeah, you know, maybe you can't go back to college, but we can offer you some of the knowledge and courses you need to do your job as a resource manager in tribal education, tribal public health.
That was Robert Williams, the faculty co-chair of the Indigenous Peoples Law and Policy Program at the University of Arizona's James E. Rogers College of Law. And that's The Buzz for this week. You can find all our episodes online at azpm.org and subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. Just search for The Buzz Arizona. We're also on the NPR app. Paolo Rodriguez is our producer, and our music is by Enter the Haggis. I'm Christopher Conover. Thanks for listening.
Arizona Public Media's original programming is made possible in part by the Community Service Grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.